the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, welcome. It's the world's greatest podcast. Cancellation pandemic division. We've got some things that impact basketball, Seth Greenberg, as the Pac-12 has announced that they're not having any sports until the first of the year, January 1st, in my view. Guess what? Basketball starts before that. We're going to have Mick Cronin on to discuss football canceling day by day, things happening. Seth, what's your overall view?
To me, it's interesting. I think if you're going to cancel sport, then I don't see how you have anyone on your campus. And the reason I say that is, and again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not saying they should play, they shouldn't play. But if it's too dangerous to have a team in a fixed environment on your campus, so with the protocols they have in place for a football team, then you know what? What are you doing this for the Big Ten? What are you going to do when there's 60,000 students wandering around your campus with very little restrictions, very little protocol, limited testing, limited contact tracing? How are you going to manage that? Like, I think a football coach has a greater opportunity, if everyone in the league is under the same protocol, has a greater opportunity to maintain a safe environment than a campus of 60,000 people. Now, look, I'm not saying they should play football. They shouldn't say play football. But if you're not going to play sport, then you know what? I'm saying that how are you going to open up your campus to 60,000 people from all over the world?
Seth, I agree with that in part. I disagree with what you've said at different times where a college campus is a safer environment. I couldn't disagree with people more than that. I think sure, the facility is a safer environment.
Yeah.
Well, there's one basketball team that I know of that came back, everybody negative, 2 weeks into being on campus in June. They had to shut it down because 7 of their 15. College campus is not the safest environment. Now, college facility, when they're there from noon to 6 or whatever, is the safest environment. I don't disagree with you on the campus issue. Here's what I say, and I've talked to numerous people about this. The bottom line, Seth, is liability. It's not the presidents that don't want to play. They want the money. It's not the athletic directors. It's not the coaches. Lawyers have put a screeching halt to this. And when the NCAA and two senators said, look, these waivers are meaningless. They can't do this. This is awful. Kids shouldn't sign. We're not signing, kids said. That ended college football. It just simply did. Because, look, when you have 60,000 kids on campus or however many you have, that's fine. But when the risk outweighs the reward, meaning you go to a football game with no fans, with no concessions, with no parking, you lose a ton of revenue. One kid gets sick without protection. One kid gets sick and God forbid one kid passes away. You've got a liability issue in the billions. Lawyers have told me, Dan, depending on the language of liability waivers, they're meaningless. And once the lawyers and the players and everybody said we can't sign these, in what I've been told by lawyers that actually do this, including my brother, college football was dead.
Period. Do you think college basketball is dead if the vaccine isn't in place? Different sport.
Less guys, right? Less guys. I always thought the college football should have made concessions and said, okay, look, we're going to go to 60 or 70 guys, not 100 guys. Home teams have 100 guys. It's crazy. I don't know, Seth. I don't know. I think you would agree, and I think Taylor, everybody would agree, so much can happen, like, over the next month. I mean, I follow the stock market pretty closely. You've got Pfizer, Moderna. And Eli Lilly all coming up or trying. Hell, you've got the Russians saying that they have a vaccine that they're sold 2 billion to 20 different countries. Now, then I read about it, and it's untested. Would you take a
only
Russian?
Tested 30 people.
Tested? Huh?
They tested 30 people.
One Putin's daughter, I think.
Yeah.
So that, I don't know about college basketball. I know this. Spring football ain't happening. Urban Meyer said it on my show yesterday, and he said it on Big Ten Network yesterday as well. You can't ask players to go through two full seasons in a calendar year. So I don't know, Seth, but I know this. Once liability and waivers and all that legal stuff happened, there was no way college football was playing.
See, so, like, here's my thing. So here comes the month of November. You let the students out a week before Thanksgiving. You, in essence, create a bubble for college basketball. Right. November to probably the end of January. So I don't think the students are going to come back till the end of January because everyone's hoping for a vaccine. All right. So if you've got that window, can you then take the major conferences that have the money and either create a bubble environment like in a Big Ten? Could you go to Indianapolis? Could you go to Columbus? Could you go to somewhere and literally play a league season and take online classes? Because let's face it, you know, like the whole thing with everyone talking about athletes taking online classes, everyone takes online classes. I mean, like, you know, the best schools in America are taking online classes. I mean, kids at Duke, the Duke baseball team's taking online classes. They're not going to any classes. So, like, that'll be the interesting conversation. And I'm interested to see from it, what do you do with your team now? Now, they start school later in the Pac-12. Right, they're those trimesters. What do you do with your team? So, like, football right now is done in the Big Ten and the Pac-12. Are they conditioning? Are they lifting? Are they allowed in the facilities? Are the coaches? What do they do? What are they? Are they all furloughed? I mean, you got to save money. Are all the coaches furloughed because, you know, basically they don't have any responsibility because they don't have a team to coach? I mean, what are you doing with your $1 million strength coach? What are you doing with your facilities? I mean,
can I throw something else at you? For the general public, okay, guys like you, me, Taylor, everybody, do you get a refund from the Big Ten Network? Do you get a refund from the Pac-12 Network? Without live sports, you think anybody's signing up for the Big Ten Network, the Pac-12 Network?
Let's be honest. After MLS and the Major League Baseball and the NBA, if we don't have anything till the basketball, what are people going to do with their ESPN contracts?
I'm telling you, it's a different world, and I'm not going to say it's catastrophic because there are certainly things worse in the world, obviously. But it is something that has ramifications. To your point,
TBT 7-on-7 passing league.
Hey, let me ask you this. All right, liability. We don't want guys sick. First off, COVID for a kid that age isn't a death sentence. I mean, it just isn't. I'm sorry. It's the numbers. The numbers back me up. You don't want to get it. You don't want to spread it. I get all that. I've studied this. You don't want to give it to your grandmother. I totally get that. In fact, my birthday's this weekend. I was going to have a party. My mom wants to come, so we canceled the party. It's just, we're calling it the Golden Girls party. We're just having my mother, my mother-in-law, a couple of their friends, and nobody from outside's coming in because I don't want to even think about being responsible. But let me ask you this, Seth. You asked some great questions. We going in the weight room every day? What if somebody gets it? What if somebody gets it from outside? Like I mentioned, the one basketball team brings it into the weight room. Now, how do you know where you got this? Do they shut everything down? Seth, I'm fascinated to hear what Mick has to say coming up. And I know it just hit Mick right between the eyes, you know, 24, 48 hours ago. But I'm fascinated by what he has to say because these are all questions that are certainly pertinent. They are. Well, and I don't have the answer, neither do you.
Yeah, because, like, here's the deal. If you open up campus and say that kids, they're just normal students. So they're interacting with more free time. We all know, like, people that have coached know that the more free time your players have, the more chance that something bad is going to happen. Players do better academically, social, and every other aspect of their lives in season. It's not even a question because they have a greater structure. Now you eliminate the structure. They're interacting with the whole student body. Their chance of getting infected is far greater than if they're in their own little, let's face it, in season, you're in a lot of ways in a bubble.
Yep. I call it, you're kind of saran wrapped. You're kind of wrapped into your routine, you know, and you're absolutely right. So I don't have any of these answers. I honestly don't. And I don't know anybody that truly, truly does. I just know this. Backing and thinking you're playing spring football is like a fake carrot to a harness race. You know, they have that rabbit that goes around. Yeah. You're not doing that. I mean, and unless this, if I were the commissioner of all things, which I absolutely should be, I'm going January 1st. I'm starting my season January 1st. Nobody's on campus. We got training camp. We set up however many games. We're done.
All the games in Dome and stadiums.
That's fine. That'd be fine too. But that's what I'm doing.
I was thinking about that on my walk with Jake, and Jake agreed.
Jake said,
Yeah, he's great. Let's get our man Mick Cronin on here. I think Tanner's going to get Mick Cronin on here. We're going to kind of get some information from him. We're going to welcome in Mick Cronin here, the head coach at UCLA, one of our favorite guys. Because the great thing about Mick Cronin is there is no gray area. He's going to tell you how he feels. He wears his emotions on his sleeves. That's why his players love him so much. That's why his players play so hard for him. All right, you get the call. Boom, January 1. What's the first thing that goes through your mind, man?
It's common in 2020. Nothing makes sense, right? I mean, look, it's crazy. You're trying to help your kids through this mentally. I think the hardest thing for me has been not having answers, guys. I mean, you guys coached a long time, and the your players look to you. You develop a closeness. There's an intimacy in basketball and the player-coach relationship. And, you know, they think you're supposed to have answers for them. They're used to you having answers for them. And throughout this thing, we have no answers for them. What's going on? Why aren't we playing? When are we going to play? And it's really the first time as a coach, you really can't give your guys answers as to what's going to happen definitively. So that's probably been the toughest part of this, is just not being able to give these guys straight answers, which is something I pride myself on. So, you know, I think at least this time I'm pretty confident that I know when we're going to play. And I think we're pretty confident through what the Pac-12 medical stuff that has been disseminated to us as coaches. And we're still going through meetings. We got another one when I hang up with you guys that I think January 1st is realistic. So at least I think now our guys know when we're going to play.
You say you will play January 1st?
I'm pretty confident in that. And the reason I say that, guys, is look, I don't want to get into details of the virus, man. I'm way underqualified for that. But it seems to be the biggest concern is without rapid testing, to be able to protect as you best you can protect the health and welfare of the student athletes and our guys. And in our case, it's just unpredictable, but it looks like, you know, they're pretty confident we'll have the rapid testing with the immediate results. And that way asymptomatic spread will be able to be stopped because everybody's going to be tested every day. And once that happens, you're looking at a 95% chance of being able to stop the spread. And that's the scariest thing, because when you're not doing everything you can to stop the spread because you don't have testing, and you got people a lot smarter than me, guys, that are concerned about the long-term heart effects that have surfaced in this stuff. So that's about as technical as I want to get with it, because I really don't know. But I think the longer you go in life, you realize that the old tribesmen they'd go to the wise man because he had been around longest and he usually had the right answers. And you know what they say, he probably said, hey, he we'll see, because people think they know. No, nobody knows. So I'm not in a rush to say we did the wrong thing, we did the right thing. All you can say is, hey, we'll see. And look, nobody knows, guys. I mean, that's the problem when you're flying a plane here, and our kids are not employees, and people are trying to do the right thing. So I guess the only thing I'd like to say to you guys, people listening, I think, a coach is going to go on here and, you know, blast the Pac-12. Why'd we shut down basketball too soon? That's not fair. And it's not fair to blast people that are playing. There's a lot of people out there that are trying to do the right thing. They just don't know what that is. So you just got to, just try to worry about our program, our kids, their mental health. I do think, guys, it gives us time to get our guys in shape so we have a good product, because that's a big concern out there. You know, how much of basketball these guys have been playing, and you don't want to get injuries trying to rush guys back. I think you've seen a lot of that in baseball.
Mick, what are you going to do with your players? What guidelines do you have? Do you take it like an elongated off season? Is that what Is that what this is?
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing with that for us, you know, we haven't been together. So, you know, it's a Zoom calls, but as you know, Dan, in basketball, these guys are working out now. But it's not the same, you know, like our guys are all working out individually. You know, I got guys have signed up for spin classes on their own in parking lots. I mean, guys at our level, they're chasing dreams. They're staying in shape, but it's not the same as being in an intense college practice. So my biggest concern is when we do come back, having enough time to make sure that we get these guys' bodies firing the right way. Today's athlete, man, they're so explosive. They're bigger, stronger. The game's played at a different speed. And we're dealing with young guys that want to have a career. So, you know, we'll start back to our workouts here soon. That was our plan anyway. And you know, the Pac-12 still going to, you know, figuring out our schedule, figuring out when we'll start practice. So that part of it, I think, for me, relieves a little stress of giving us time, because the last thing I didn't want to be put in a position to have to train guys too hard, too fast, get guys injured. That would not have been good.
Yeah, you talk about getting your guys on campus. Like, will they, prior to January 1, is it your understanding they'll let you get your guys together? Like, if say January 1 is the goal.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's for games and competition. So what you're looking at, I mean, there's schools in our conference that Colorado's been working out all summer. Ted will tell you it's going great for them. Our plan was to start our reentry here soon for basketball at UCLA as far as our individual workouts. We'll start, you know, we'll have individual workouts at some point, hopefully soon. You know, we're a quarter system school, which is a challenge. So that part of it, you know, we got a little time, but we could, you know, we're in summer school right now, so we will be till September 10th, but we can bring the guys back here hopefully at some point in the next 2 to 4 weeks, start our workouts, start getting guys in shape slowly, and build up, you know, from a progression standpoint of, you know, getting to what you would have, you know, less risk, individual workouts, small groups, and then live play. So, yeah, I think what you're hopefully looking at is our games will start, Coach, in January 1.
Yeah, let me follow up on that, because, like, here's the thing. Are your kids going to take online classes only? Because, I mean, so you're going to come back and you're going to get into individuals, and then you can eventually get into full practice. Yeah, I don't know how many students, UCLA, what do you got, 80,000 students, 70,000 students, 60,000 students?
No, it's about 36, I think, is our
36.
Our
they're walking around campus. Hard to social distance on that campus, I can tell you that much.
So we'll have a small number. UCLA's plan is less than 10% back on campus. And, again, I'm talking out of turn, you know, Chancellor Block. I hope I don't misrepresent us, so I apologize to him, but I know we're less than 10%. I'm going to guess closer to 7 or 8%. And what you're looking at is essential students. And I think this is most campuses. Some are no students, but essential meaning, you know, smart kids like our daughters, Coach Greenberg. I can't give that to your son, because he's not smart. He went into coaching. He should, he should have been a little smart.
My daughter's brilliant. Oh, there you go.
There you go. See, so the smart kids that are in labs and trying to be doctors, you know, that need to be present, that's who you're going to have on campuses. So I think at UCLA, you're looking at essential students, which would be, you know, student athletes need to be there to train. You're looking at, you know, pre-med or whatever type of students that need to be present for labs, maybe high-end, you know, music training. So you're talking a small percentage. So campus will not be crowded, to answer your question.
Hey, Mick, how involved are coaches in any decision?
well, I would say that – I've already built a great relationship with our new athletic director, Martin Jarman. He played for Jerry Wainwright, who's a mentor of mine. So we think the same. I already miss my guy, Dan Guerrero, is a great guy because they're both basketball guys. So I think stuff like this, we all know, look, the chancellor's made the decision that was put out yesterday. And they did it through for medical reasons and best interest of the student athletes and health and safety.
Right. I mean, that's.
Yeah. We all know we're not in that room when those decisions are made. And, you know, maybe some of us are qualified to be in there. Maybe we're not. I think, you know, again, maturity and wisdom are the keys because, you have to have the wisdom to do what's right, not what you want to do at times. You know, that's the hardest thing about leadership. You know, I tried to become a better coach. You know, there's times when I want to get really upset with somebody, but the right move is to put your arm around them, you know, and that's where wisdom comes in. And that's why these guys are presidents, guys and gals, I should say, and, you know, men and women are presidents of universities and chancellors of universities to make the decision for the greater good. So I just think, I don't know your guys' opinion. It's tough for me to watch the constant ripping but you can't win if you're in their position. If you cancel, there's one columnist in USA Today that kills you for not playing. The other one columnist kills you for playing. So they're in tough spots. But, you know, as General Patton said, command is a lonely post.
Mick, how do you move? You know, I guess the question I have, one, how do you move forward in recruiting and continue to maintain your program? And number two, which probably is as important, like say these other leagues start playing. Is that a question you've got? I mean, like, that you have.
Yeah, I knew you were coming with that one because that is the night. Well, first of all, recruiting's easy if you got a phone. You know, I think your video presentations and upgrading your video presentations while there's no campus visits is your biggest challenge, right? So we have two commitments in this class, but both of those kids have been on our campus. So for kids that haven't been on your campus, that becomes more of a challenge. And it looks, you know, the dead period probably is going to be extended through the signing date. So, you know, how do you sign guys that haven't been on a visit? That obviously that's a huge challenge. And the last part, I guess, is you guys know this, as a head coach, it's hard to get out. And you're looking forward to seeing all these young guys play your assistants are telling you about in April and then, you know, in the summer, and all of a sudden you can't watch them, you know, and you're trying to evaluate a guy off of film. And that's a very scary thing because that's never gone well for me. So I don't know about you guys, but, you know, the second part of your question, but you can still recruit. I mean, you just got to find ways. Everybody's doing it. And but the second part, I guess, like you're saying is it going to, you know, what's going to be the balance? You know, so if we start our games January 1st, let's say we play 22 or 24 games and other teams start early. That's what you're saying. Yeah. So, that, you know, how does that balance your chance to get into the NCAA tournament? I'd say it's too early to even worry about that because, again, how are other teams? I just think, you know, maybe the Pac-12 just beat people to the punch of what's inevitable. Maybe, I don't know, again, but how are teams going to play bye games? How are you going to put your team out there against a team from a smaller Division I conference that doesn't have the financing to do testing and protocols? So how do you put your team out there against a team that doesn't have the money to even get COVID testing? How do you do that? So how do you play those games? You know, how do you tell your parents or your players that we're safely playing that game against a team? You know, it's different. And, you know, when you're playing in the Power Five, everybody's doing the same stuff from a testing standpoint. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I don't know.
I don't think teams are going to play knockout games, to be honest with you. I think people are just going to play more league games or maybe even move the start of the league season up to after Thanksgiving. I mean, when when they basically
a lot of things can happen. So that's why I say it's, you know, it's really probably premature to even start thinking about, well, how does this disadvantage the Pac-12 to get in the NCAA tournament? I think is your main question. We don't know what the other teams are going to do, you know, or do we, or does everything get pushed back and we play the entire season starting in January? You know, so much could happen over the next 6 weeks. You know, if I'd have told you guys a month ago, the Big Ten's of all, you know, of the Michigan Ohio State game's not going to happen. I mean, would you really have believed it? I mean, so you just don't know.
You know, Mick, you mentioned the NCAA tournament. I swear to God, first two questions I got in my inbox for my radio show when they announced that football was canceled was that. Of an NCAA tournament, you know, how do you deal? You mentioned talking to your players about, you know, not having the answers. How have you handled the parents and how have they been?
We get great parents. That's one thing I've been very fortunate. And the reason I can say that is, you know, when I got the job, nobody transferred, which is very rare. As you got, people just transfer anything. The wind blows, people transfer.
I
got the job. As you know, I got the job, nobody transferred, and the parents gave me a chance. You know, obviously a totally different style of coaching, delivery, style of play, everything. And, you know, especially hairdo between Steve and I. So, you know, they all stayed, and they've been great. I think, you know, parents, again, you know, they're older than their kids. So the wisdom of, you know, the kids just want to play, man. But the parents understand ramifications, and they want safety. You know, they're like, we all love our kids. So that's why we're at a point with, you know, our guys. Earlier this summer, guys, it was not time to bring anybody back, in my opinion. And I didn't even entertain it. I didn't push for it. I didn't think it was right. It was way too many unknowns back in May and June. But now we're at a point where in our case, and I would probably say this is most cases, our guys are all training on their own, wherever they can get in the gym. And I don't know how safe that is. They're playing pickup. They're playing 5-on-5. They're training. They're getting in, finding a weight room somewhere that they can get in somehow, some way. And to me, they'd be a lot safer with us with testing. Even if we would have to go through certain protocols and it, you know, might be a little bit of a pain for them, you know, every day to go through the protocols that go on everywhere where, you know, where they're back in training. So safety, I think, with parents, you know, is the main thing. And just, you know, my message to them has been, whatever we do, when all this starts back up, you got to continue to remember it's voluntary. Scholarships remain. And if people aren't comfortable with their kids playing, nobody's taking anybody's scholarship. And I think that, you know, I'm sure that'll be universal in college athletics.
Here's my thing. We just watched these two pitchers from the Cleveland Indians, right? Not have enough that,
yeah, you
know, teammates, be selfish. I think that's the biggest challenge. Like, you're going to find out schools that have good cultures, good teammates, guys that are in it to win, because you know what? They're going to have to be, and I say this goofy line all the time, they got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. They're going to have discipline to be a good teammate and give up some stuff that they're normally used to having. Like, you made a great point a second ago. Like, your guys are all working out. LA's the greatest thing about LA is there's 8,000 guys that are working out. There's 8,000 gyms. You can get a good run. But that's so much more dangerous than having them on campus where they get in a routine, have protocol, have medical doctors available to them. God forbid they get sick. They have everything at their access. They're home and It's not the same. I mean, isn't that, as a coach, doesn't that worry you like every single night?
Yes. Yes. And you know, obviously I'm not going to give you names, but we've had multiple guys that have already had the virus and been through it. Right. And you know, you're concerned with them spreading it to their family members, right? Yeah. Especially grandma and grandpa, or, you know, somebody with a medical condition, because they're out there working out, they're out there playing, not being irresponsible. We're talking about guys working out.
Yeah.
Get a phone call. somebody that was at that gym got the virus, you better go get tested. You know, so yeah, that's a concern. That's why, I got to a point where I thought earlier in the summer, hey, you know, we don't need to be rushing these guys back right now. We don't even know when we're going to play. And you couldn't really get in gyms in May, and then it started loosening in June. But by now, it's guys are training and working out, playing every day. So, you know, now I'm at opinion for their safety. I think I need to get them back with us for not just for their safety, for just it'll help control the spread. The more guys are working out in quarantined environments. So, that is a concern. The guys that we've had that have dealt with it for us are all dealt with it easily. And, you know, the typical, what you've heard of younger guys, you know, quick and easy. So most asymptomatic. So, which is scary, man, because guys are running around playing games and, you know, getting in any gym they can get in, and nobody's being tested. So you know, and you're dealing with young people being asymptomatic. So I think that goes back to the Pac-12's decision about trying to get us to a point where we get the rapid testing, that'll eliminate the asymptomatic spread that you're seeing on the sports teams, whether it was the Marlins or the Cardinals. But well, wild times, guys. You ever think we were going to talk about basketball?
Oh,
instead of talking about this stuff?
Hey, Mick, last thing, we'll let you go. The Pac-12, some of the players had a letter, controversial, how a couple football coaches have responded, that kind of thing. What was your thought on all that?
Yeah, you know I'm going to be with you on that one, Dan. I mean, look, first of all, you're not seeing any of that in basketball. You know, I think there's recruiting involved in that type of stuff. I think young people have maybe been twisted into some things that, from what I've heard, it's confusing. But look, at the end of the day, as long as there's amateurism, there's going to be, and especially, you know, in big time college athletics, there's going to be a movement for de-amateurism. There's going to be a movement for paying players. It's never going to go away. And the bottom line is, it's just a matter of understanding. You know, the average person, and we don't have enough time on our show, they don't understand that a place that has 24 sports, that like UCLA, that 21 of them are not revenue sports. And a few of them are paying for the rest of them. They don't understand that Andrew Dockich goes to wherever to play basketball, and the school doesn't let him in for free. The athletic department pays the university for his scholarship. So the financial, and I'm not saying it's right, I'm just saying explaining the situation of the numbers of college athletics, that 97% of athletic departments are in a deficit. It's not as easy as saying, okay, we're going to pay them. You're talking about people that are trying to find a way to just come up with the money to maintain and have athletic departments at the level they have them. And I think that's what's not known to 95% of America. Well, the coaches are getting paid, they're making all this money, they're on TV, pay them. Well, they would if they had the money. The money's going to scholarships, food, travel, and 24 sports, and it's not enough. And you have major universities subsidizing their athletic department with $20 million subsidies, $40 million subsidies, just so they can operate. So, people don't know that on the outside. But I get what I get what they're trying to say. I get it all. I understand it all, but I'll leave you guys with this. I always say it. Teach a guy how to make his food, grow his food, and survive, or you can give him a meal. And, you know, I'm all for basketball players. You graduate, you play high major, and they put $20,000 away a year. You get $100,000. I tell my team this. Is that $100,000? It'd be great. Get it. You're going to retire off of that? So again, it's our purpose still, we need to educate these guys and as best we can. And that should be our mission, to where they can make their own food. They can survive. They can have a life. They can be their best self, because giving them a certain amount of money, although it may be right, and if it was there, I'm all for giving it to them, it's not going to last them a lifetime. I mean, nobody's retiring off of that. So that's not the end all be all answer, is what I always met, you know, when I talked to Jay Billis about it, you know, and the, you know, as he gets going on, pay him. That's great. But educate them is the most important thing. And I'm not talking about just getting your degree. I'm talking about educate them on what the real world's about, so they can go out there and do what they need to do, like you guys did when you were coaches. And we all get banged on, guys, because of how much money we make in coaching. But the difference we can make in their life is the most important thing.
I'm with you 100%. You talk about education, all the social issues that we have in our country. The easiest way to solve that thing is education. And you know what? The one thing that we fight hardest with our players at all the time, and I'm just using that because those are the guys that we're supposed to, is making sure they understand the value of education. The one thing we've got to do with the NCAA is they've got to give athletic departments, and I'm just talking from our world, opportunities to build bridges for your athletes to interact with wealthy alumni that can open up doors so when the ball stops bouncing, that they have a network at the end of those 4 years that can help them cross a bridge to have a life outside of athletics. And I think that internship program, and even though guys don't want to do it, and building bridges for guys to meet the people that the influencers, that's the most important thing. Because let's face it, very few of these guys, you know, maybe in your sport, but like football's got 100 guys. How many of those guys can make a living playing football? Not very many.
Not very many.
Not very many.
Not very many. You couldn't say it any better.
Bridges for them to cross outside of athletics.
Coach, I mean, you couldn't say any better. And Dan's a blunt guy, like me at times. And I think it's taken wrong. What we're trying to do is make sure your guys understand that, you know, when you're done playing and you can't help anybody win games anymore, you need to understand that nobody's going to have time. Okay. You're going to have to make your own way. That just because you played somewhere, people aren't just going to hand you a free job and a free life. And that I think the biggest thing that for me, what I try, guys, is our players, and that we've all been around, they've worked so hard. They have great. You can't play high level sports if you're not a hard working athlete that practice, games, travel, discipline, back up at it. It's, you know, it's nowadays it's a year round sport. The grind is real. And to teach them that they can take that same focus, that same energy, the same toughness, and apply it to a life outside of basketball and be successful. This getting a guy's mind there is and like you said, Coach, you know, the bridge. And a lot of that is a mental state, you know, just getting the guys their mind to, all you got to do is, if you work as hard as you did it as a college athlete, you can be wildly successful. But you can't just go, but you can't be a college athlete forever. And when that ball stops bouncing, you got to be able to translate it, you know, and that's why now that I live in LA, you know, so tragic what happened to Kobe Bryant, because here was a guy that had all the money in the world, but his work ethic was so real and his passion to get up every day and do something productive was so real. He was such a great example of what was going on in his life for basketball, young basketball players, because he was already doing unbelievable things away from basketball, away from the court. And it was a shining light. It would have been just such a continued great example to look, because I was already saying, look at this guy's life. You know, he didn't just retire and gain 40 pounds and hang out on the Newport Beach. Look what he's doing, because he was such a worker. So I just, you know, that's what we got to teach these guys. You know, at the end of the day, I think as much as we can and build bridges for them, there's no doubt about it. But, you know, back to your original question, Dan, you know, I tell the guys, you got to be careful with some of those things that you're reading about, because you end up not playing. You know, and even though I'm all for it now, I'm on the side of you know, there's got to be a way to do more for the student athlete. You know, my thing is the NCAA tournament. We make so much money from the NCAA tournament in men's basketball. You know, I think when we go to tournament sites that we should be using money to hire former players as a way to put money in their pocket and do seminars, 30 minutes while them kids are just waiting around for media sessions and waiting to do meaningless walkthroughs on the court, that you bring in a former player and let him give a life talk for 30 minutes. Put money in that guy's pocket, make a difference in the guy's lives in that locker room that are getting ready to play in that tournament. Because the more they hear the truth from guys that played, and you can help guys that played. So just and any bridge program that Coach Greenberg was talking about to try to help our guys get ready for life after basketballs, we got to do more of it.
Thanks, Mick. Thank you.
It's great today because I know you got the day off. We got the Riviera, Beverly Hills, Bridge.
Yeah, you know, it's tough out here. You know, your choice of golf courses is limited, right, Coach? And then every now and then I got to go down with my main man, Coach Savage, our baseball coach at UCLA. I got to hang around a guy that's won a national championship, and hopefully it rubs off on you. So I got to go down to your old club down
to Seal Beach. People at Old Ranch, I'm welcome to come back to any member guest once this thing clears up.
We'll do it. We got to go have a reunion down at Old Ranch.
You got it, man. Be safe. Take care of your family. Right.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right.
D-Square, I have to finish up now. Give me the joke. Give me the deal on this new famous sandwich you make. Because you said if you have two good foods, you might as well put them together. Because if you like two things, I hear you have a new latest sandwich.
Seth, here's my theory. You got to really like something, okay? And if you put it together with something you really like, it's always good. So what I did, I really like imitation crab meat. I like real crab meat, but I mean, let's be honest. I'm not going out and shucking crabs to, you know, make a sandwich in the afternoon. So I had some crab meat. I had some bread, toasted the bread, and I really like pepperoni. I love pepperoni. When I go to jail and I'm on death row, my last meal is going to be like a charcuterie board with cheese and meats and that. So I'm like, you know what? I'm putting them together. Threw some mayo on there. This theory is infallible. Like the only way and it was fantastic. It was a toasted imitation fake crab. Pepperoni, olive oil, mayo sandwich, and I'm not gonna lie to you, that thing would go for $12 at a store or at a restaurant. My listeners oftentimes crush me and say, I love shrimp and I love ice cream. They tell me shrimp and ice cream would not mix. I'm gonna try that, I think, probably this Sunday for my birthday.
What number birthday we got?
58. On Monday, 58.
Oh, you're a spring chicken.
I know.
You're a spring chicken. Well, my dining philosophy is this. I mean, I get killed because I have a house of women. If you go to a restaurant and you find a dish you like, every time you go to that restaurant, what should you do?
Order that dish.
You know exactly what you're getting.
Right.
You're going to be happy. You'll be fat and happy at the end of the meal. And every time I do that, was Maximia here, I get my eggplant parmesan with a little extra cheese, and I get looked at like, you got that the last time we took out from here. And I said, yeah, I like it. Why don't you try to eat something different? I said, because I know I like it. What is wrong with that?
Nothing. Seth, why go to that restaurant? Because I like it. I would challenge our listeners. Now, again, you can't say like broccoli and ketchup because I don't like broccoli. So I wouldn't put it with any. I wouldn't put broccoli with anything. But I challenge our listeners to say, all right, give me something that you really like, pair it with something that you really like, and tell me it's bad, because it's not. It's always good. Always good. What's bad about it? Like, there's nothing going into your mouth that you dislike. So there you go, Seth Greenberg. But you got to really like them both.
That's another great reason. So now I'm going to ask you the last question, then I'm going to go, because we're speaking again at 2. You're going to get tired of me today.
Yes.
Last Question of the day. Will we have college basketball this year?
I'm going to ask you that on my show, so get ready. I'm going to say, based on what Mick said, yeah, we'll have it in some fashion or form.
Yeah, I think we're going to have college basketball. And I actually think some leagues will start earlier than later.
Yeah. Will we have an NCAA tournament?
Yes. And I got a new idea. My newest idea with no college football, doesn't leave. TBT football style, 7-on-7.
No.
I'm telling you.
All right. Thanks,
old washed up quarterbacks. Some old receivers.
Oh, geez.
Put them in a bubble.
If you can't play whatever, if you can't play any sports, then you're not playing 7-on-7. I mean, you don't have volleyball. It's not only basketball or football that's been canceled. It's been all four fall sports. That would qualify as a fall sport. I'm the realist in here. You're the dreamer, pal. Thanks.
7-on-7 football. Should it be a second round of TBT?
I agree with that. Hey, I'm all for anything TBT. Thanks for listening. We're going to go before we, overstay our welcome. Seth, you the man.
I'll see you at 2 o'clock.
Rate us 5 wherever you get your podcast, and we'll be back next week. Mick Cronin was great. Peace out.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.